Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600. And thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks. Checking in this morning with Bridgeport City Council members Jeanette Heron, as well as Michael DeFilippo, who are with the 133rd District this morning. And Jeanette and Michael, thank you both for being here this morning. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing fine, thank you. So whoever would like to start, what was your reaction when the Columbus statue actually came down last week, pretty suddenly?
This is Jeanette. I was very disappointed. I was very shocked. I found out, I think, about 15 minutes before the statue came down. We were told as a council that for us to handle the situation and for us to do whatever was necessary, and that's what we were doing. We had a group of our council negotiating, or actually talking, not negotiating, talking and trying to resolve a situation that could have actually have gotten worse. The negotiations and the conversation was going very well, and then all of a sudden the rug was taken out of, you know, from under us.
Mm-hmm. That's what it sounded like from Chris Caruso, who came on the day after that statue came down. He said almost the exact same thing, where the rug seemed to have been taken out from under everyone's feet. Now, Michael, could you touch on what's happening now? What has the city council decided to do?
All right. So we collectively as a body put in a resolution to get the statue put back up down at Seaside, where it's been for 50 years, while the dialogue continues. Like Jeanette had mentioned, there was ongoing dialogue between the Italian-American community, city council members, people from every different walk of life as to how to make everybody happy on this issue. And like she said, the mayor pulled the rug out from us.
So what would be your response? I asked Mayor Joe Ganim why the sudden removal. His response was pretty point blank that he was having to get police 24 hours a day, basically watching over this statue, because he didn't want to see what happened in other places where statues have been decapitated, they've been painted on, they've been graffitied on. He didn't want to see that happen, and he felt that this was the quick fix of removing it and also not using up our resources at the police department. Do you buy that or no?
Would you like me to answer?
Oh, sure, both of you. Jeanette, if you'd like to start.
I agree in some aspects that there were threats across the country. I don't think those imminent threats were as strong here. We have a very diverse community, and yes, there were people escalating a situation, and justifiably, they have a right to be hurt. They have a right to be angry. You know, the past, you know, was horrible. But I think with Bridgeport trying to talk and do the right thing, it could have set precedent across the country to allow, you know, more positive reactions to a bad situation.
Michael, was there something you wanted to add?
Myself, personally, I think it was a cop-out by the mayor. I don't think that he was trying to catch any controversy. I think he did the quick, easy thing to appease a vocal minority, and he took the statue away.
Even though it was only a few days, I think it was over the weekend, that in Waterbury they did decapitate that statue. And 2 weeks before that, New Haven did have paint thrown on their statue. You still felt it was like a cop-out?
I personally do. Like we said, there was ongoing dialogue on both sides, everybody included, people that were pro, people that were against. And we were trying to come to an equitable solution so that everybody would be appeased. And I guess he just decided what was best.
Okay. Again, we're talking to Jeanette and Michael. They are Bridgeport City Council members representing the 133rd District, talking about the Columbus statue. And as of right now, it sounds like you guys have plans to get that statue back up in place. Now, for the people who are not for the statue staying, do you worry that there will be repercussions worse than before it was removed?
Melissa, I think that is something that would have to be addressed. The more attention, the more it happens. Our city, again, like I said, is very diverse. Our communities work together. We always have. Are there issues? Absolutely. But I'm not too concerned that that's going to be taken down. I think if everybody is at the table to discuss an alternative and a solution, I think we can do it. I think Bridgeport is very strong. And we've proven that in the past, that we come together when we need to through thick and thin. So I think we can do this again. I think we can put some of the anger on the side and we can work. And I want those people that are not happy about it, I want them to come to the table and discuss their feelings and their views. They're part of Bridgeport.
Mm-hmm. So is the mayor going to be included in this decision next week?
We have requested with the council, you need three council or more to request an emergency meeting. We're waiting for the mayor to respond to that. And when that does happen, then we will have that meeting. Like Mike said, 14 of us have signed off on this resolution and on the fact of requesting a meeting to be held immediately. So we're just waiting now for an answer.
Yeah, we requested the meeting for next Monday night. And basically, at this point, the ball is in Ganim's hand. He needs to commission the meeting. So we're waiting for him to come to the table and get this thing going.
Melissa, I want people to understand as well, the park commissions, the commissioners did not know any of this was transpiring.
Mm-hmm.
They have ultimate authority for the park, anything that goes in and anything that goes out. There was a meeting the other night. It was requested by the city for the parks authority to take over again, and they put it back into the mayor's hands. They said since it was taken down, now, you know, the municipality has to deal with it.
Right.
So now we're waiting for that answer as well.
Okay. So the soonest we probably could see some sort of resolution would be Monday night. So that statue could be back in its place as early as Tuesday, no?
If the body, if the body votes that way, yes.
Okay. Well, I would love to have you guys back on, if possible, next week to keep us posted. If there are any developments, would you be open to that?
Sure, we would.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, I thank you both so much. Again, talking to Bridgeport City Council members Jeanette Herron and Michael DeFilippo of the 133rd District. Thank you both so much for coming on and talking about this, and I look forward to having you back on next week.
Thank
Melissa,
you.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely.
From Long Ridge to the Cove and all over Stamford, it's Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Dr. Fred Brown is here of Griffin Health. And Dr. Brown, always a pleasure to talk to you. How are you this morning?
Good. How are you, Melissa?
I'm doing fine, thank you. So there was a lot of news swirling earlier this week talking about vaccines for COVID-19. Can you give us the latest on this? I know that we're probably going to see a record turnaround of early next year, that the first available vaccine will be here. But what did you hear about with this most recent data?
You know what? It's looking promising, and I think that's really important. We know that this virus does have some mutations and some changes, but it sounds like the areas that activate the immune system have been identified, and that's what you would use in a vaccine. And interesting enough, I don't know if people know this, but there's new ways of developing vaccines to make them safer and more effective. And there's a couple companies that are actually coming out with that. So I think it's, you know, it's not only a good thing for, you know, our current pandemic, but it's also a good thing for the future to know that we're going to have better vaccines.
Yeah. And the other thing that I took away from this too, Dr. Brown, do you, in your professional opinion, believe that we're going to start seeing quicker turnarounds for vaccines? Because let's face it, before the pandemic, if you wanted a vaccine in place, it was going to take a lot longer than a year turnaround. This is, like I said, the record, like the fastest we've seen the CDC able to turn something like this around. Would you say that going forward, we're going to see a quicker turnaround for vaccines? Or is it just because we're in a pandemic that we're using every resource possible to make this happen?
You know what? It's interesting, because I do think we're going to see faster turnarounds for vaccines, but I think we're going to be more alert to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think after this pandemic, we're really going to have a better focus on prevention. So when something shows up, if there's a new virus that's coming out, or as actually we start to notice a new virus, mm-hmm. then I think the vaccine process will start a lot sooner. I think it's relatively easier now to at least get the early stages to actually do that. The trick is going to be is that it still has to go through the process of safety. And that's really important. That's an area that we never want to skip on. Mm-hmm. You know, we want to continue to do everything to make sure that it's completely safe. And I think even though we will come up with vaccines pretty quickly, and we did come up with an initial vaccine very quickly with COVID-19, but then we have to bring it through the studies and relate it to patients to make sure that it is safe. I think we talked about that before, about making sure that the treatment isn't worse than the treatment isn't worse than the cure.
Right. And any insight from Griffin Health as far as PPE is concerned? I know that we are expecting, I don't want to say another wave, but an uptick to happen again, or maybe a spike in the fall. And I'm wondering, I worry that, when this all first got started, the reason Connecticut and many other states were in such bad shape was because we didn't have the PPE. We didn't have what we needed to protect our doctors, protect patients, anything like that. I know that we want to say we're very prepared, but my worry is that we're starting to see the rest of the country is sort of struggling right now. And I'm just wondering, do Connecticut hospitals have what they need if another wave does come about, not even just this year, but next year and future? Like, are we going to make PPE a bigger priority in hospitals?
So that is actually a really great point. And I can tell you that we are still in good supply. Mm-hmm. We still would have the ability, if we did have another uptick, that we would have the ability to have appropriate PPE. That is an issue, though. It is getting harder and harder to get PPE. And because we're seeing it around the country, the rest of the country is starting to use it. And even though, there wasn't a significant increase in the amount of PPE that was developed, some of it was not adequate. Some of it was not appropriate, did not meet the standards that it really should have. So it is a concern. And I can tell you that we are making sure that we have at least I wouldn't say a stockpile, because we need to make sure we have the appropriate. We don't want to be taking from our colleagues down in the South, but making sure that we have enough in case there is another uptick.
Absolutely. Talking to Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health. Now, I had a couple of questions from listeners that I wanted to get your advice on, Dr. Brown. First of all, can you get infected with COVID twice? That was a question from my brother, because my father, as you know, had COVID in like the December time. And now we're in July, and my brother worries, it's been about 6 months. So can he get it again? He doesn't know if he ever got it, but if he did get it, can he get it again this year?
It is very unlikely that it's going to be a repeat.
Okay.
And there was some early data that showed that there's a possibility of a repeat. That may be the testing, because there was a persistence in the virus, the dead virus. So what can happen is that because the test that we do is very, very sensitive, what can happen is that it can actually detect dead virus. So it actually sees its RNA, its nuclei, its genome. So we can actually see that even after an organism is dead. So that was a confusion that people had. But it does not look like it. It looks like once you had it, you have it. And this is also the premise of a vaccine. A natural infection is always better than a vaccine itself.
Checking back in with Dr. Fred Brown of Griffin Health, talking about what else? COVID-19. And Dr. Brown, I come to you for my medical advice.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I wanted to lay this out here because I am getting very conflicting messages, not from doctors per se, but from businesses, schools, I'll say the public. I'll leave it at that. Should toddlers be wearing masks? And the reason I ask this question is because my son, who was in dire need of a haircut, was not allowed to go to his haircutting place. He is just shy of turning two. Because he would not wear a mask. Now, my understanding, I thought when we had first kind of got into, Connecticut residents have to wear masks. My understanding was it was, first of all, dangerous for little kids to even have to wear masks. But then the other part of it is it even plausible? So I would love to get your medical expertise on this. Should kids, under the age of 5 have to wear masks in public?
And I'll give you my opinion on that. And my concern is exactly that, is that there's, you know, there are, you know, putting masks on children is potentially dangerous. You know, we don't know the longer term effects about putting a mask on someone like that. We don't know about, you know, what's being filtered, what's not being filtered. We know there's choking and and suffocation risk. I mean, obviously not with a mask, but if they're not watched very closely. So it's sort of, my opinion is that, you know, I think it's sort of silly to have children less than five wear a mask. I think the likelihood that they're going to spread it, the likelihood that they're going to have the lung volume to even spread it, you know, 6 feet is just not there. So again, I would say that it's, you know, very unlikely that they're going to spread it. It's very unlikely. It's probably in their best interest to not wear a mask.
So is it something that would be worth, because I have Governor Lamont on pretty often on this show, and he's actually coming on tomorrow morning. Is it worth having him look into that and sort of correcting that? Because like I said, I mean, for my son, okay, so we got his hair cut in the garage instead. We had a friend do it, no big deal. But, you know, when you look at some of these places of business, like my son has not gone to a restaurant, he has not gone to a store, and part of that is out of safety. But the other part is, I'm not putting a mask on my kid. I'm not
right.
doing it. I think
right.
it's ridiculous.
Right.
He's not even 2 years old. I'm not doing it. And I know that that sounds ridiculous maybe to some people who are very nervous, but that's why he stays at home. But I just think, why do kids under the age of five, and I keep saying five just because I don't even look at them as being in school yet, why is there this push to have them wearing masks? Not to mention it scares them. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I you know what, you do have the opportunity to talk to the governor. I would have him clarify that. As I said, I know the CDC and others have recommended that children at a certain age do not need to wear masks. And again, I think it's the risk benefit aspect. So I think we need to be very careful about, you know, what are we doing to our children.
So the CDC has recommended that up to a certain age they shouldn't have to wear a mask.
I'll have to double check that, but
okay.
That is my understanding. So.
Okay. That's what I thought,
too. After our conversation, I will have to check.
Okay. That would be great. And I know, I think you have my email. If not, I know our correspondent has our email. I would just
Absolutely.
Love to know that answer because I know for just myself and then I know our listeners, a lot of people have had questions on what is that age. And to me, I always thought it was five and under got cleared of not having to wear a mask. But, you know, I could be wrong, and I know a lot changes every day. So if you don't mind looking into that, I would really appreciate it.
I'll definitely look into it, and I said, you know, you have my opinion, but and I would definitely talk to the governor about it.
Okay. All right. I will definitely do that tomorrow then. Well, Dr. Brown, thank you so much for weighing in on that. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
Absolutely.
All right.
Have a good day.
You too.